The first section of our program will look at the power of business to restore businesses and industries to God's original intent for them and how we can be a force for good in our industries. Here to talk to us about a redemptive approach to stewarding investments are Ike Cha, founder and CEO of Lion's Share Venture Holding, and Peter Forer, CEO of the Mogon Group. We also have Almira Strauss from Mogon, who has jumped in to facilitate as Pierre Malan had to pull out at the last minute due to a crisis. Fortunately, not related to COVID. Although I think the fact that we have the Minister of Tourism in charge of our vaccination program is a massive crisis and possibly the opposite of a redemptive approach to stewarding life-saving investments. But that aside, please remember to comment in the chat function and put any questions you have for the panel in the Q&A section on the right of your screen. But right now, our panel discussion.
Thank you, Ike and Peter, for joining us here. And we continue to roll with the punches, as we've learned over the last 18 months. Hugo, unfortunately, is not able to join us on this panel. But we've got very interesting things to talk about. Ike and Peter, you both have got very unusual journeys, but very successful journeys in the world of business. And we want to talk a little bit about calling and investment. Ike, you almost went into living out your faith in full-time ministry and then ended up in business. Can you tell us a bit about some of those key moments in your journey and how you got called into business?
No, thanks very much. First of all, to Megan and the team, I would say this is probably a game-changer type initiative. So I just want to say, you know, thank you very much. And thanks to the Almighty for giving you the wisdom, because I think the multiplier effect is going to be great. So my story is, yeah, it's a very, very interesting. I've never told this story, I guess, in public. So in 1988, if some of you remember, Pope John Paul was in Zimbabwe, right? So I said mass with the Pope John Paul, and my vision was to become a priest. I spent, after that, I actually went into a monastery for about 2 years, right, with the calling to become a priest, because I thought God had called me to serve him in that way. And in my 17, 18, 19 year old, after 2 years, I actually figured out that I was a little bit not called in that way. And I remember leaving the monastery in September 1990, right, and stood on the altar. And all I just got the mission was, I just said, God, I'm here to serve you, not in this way, but probably not in another way. And I sit here in almost 30 years later, having gone into business and the journey. I guess that's another story. So my calling to serve God through business is still probably the same interesting calling.
Thank you very much, Ike. Peter, and you started off in law. You and I have been working together for many years now. What called you into the business world?
Well, Almira, thank you very much. If I look back, you know, I guess like most of the people in the audience, there's a couple of key moments. I didn't grow up with any business background. My father was a civil servant, and so there was never any plans to go into business. I studied chartered accounting, and after having spent a few years at a professional firm, I really felt God starting to lay something on my heart about, am I willing to be open to serve him where he's calling me? And am I being prepared to step out into a little bit of uncertainty if that is what he's asking from me? And so that was really a defining moment for me, because from there I really felt like I need to just create the space for God to really do the unusual and do the unexpected in my life. And so I started having more and more conversations with different people, and that was sort of directly responsible for leading me to join forces with Francois, to get connected with Francois. And without fully knowing exactly what Francois had done, which was before there was any Mogon website or anything like that, just by God's grace, almost stumbled into this journey with together with Francois and with Mogon. But I started off as a financial manager in one of the companies in the group that Francois had built. And I guess a second key moment then arrived a couple of years later where we were sort of in a transition. We had completed a transaction with Infotech, and Francois was sort of contemplating what the next phase looks like would look like. And so he ended up asking me, Peter, what would you like to do for the next season? And somewhat impetuously, I said to him, well, I'd love to run my own company and run an investment business. And Francois very graciously, I guess, supported me, even though I'm sure he must have had some doubts. And nonetheless, after a few months, we had done some investments and things had started getting going. But I really started feeling God challenged me again, very specifically around, why did he bring me here? Did he bring me here to do my own thing? Or did he bring me here to get involved and get behind something that he was already busy with? And it was just clear that Mergon was something where God was already busy with. And so after some time, I realized that I needed to lay down this thing about wanting to do my own thing and steward or become involved in stewarding something that God was doing through Mergon. And that really was a key moment, I guess, for me, together with a number of other things that eventually led to me becoming CEO and I guess sort of how the journey panned out from there. But it's a reminder that, and I often look back on that, to remind myself, I guess, that it's, you know, as Christians, when we think about calling in the marketplace, we so often think that we need to go and do our own thing, that God's calling us to go and build our own thing. And actually, sometimes God is actually just wanting to use us to get behind what he's doing somewhere else. And it's definitely, that was a key moment for me.
Thank you, Peter. It's certainly been an interesting journey. And as you say, you are thinking about, you know, stewardship and you know, you both are looking after, in essence, other people's money, but it's not just other people's money. Ike, how do you think about being a godly steward or a redemptive steward of capital? Capital that's not yours, other people, but maybe also not those other people's capital, really.
That's a very interesting one. So so my business journey has actually been what I call friends and family's money. That's how I started up. And maybe to add a story further down, I actually started, I came out of corporate and started by buying a property in Joburg using a credit card. You know, and when you're using a credit card, it's other people's money.
It's the bank's money.
It's the bank's money. And it's the depositor's money. The main family and friends' money that I used always made me feel that I was actually more responsible to the people that borrowed me the money. So I built my business through friendships and relationships. You know, people who had the same values, people who had the same beliefs, who then would, up till today, most of my investors and partners, we actually never signed contracts. It was really a trust and a handshake where we built an interesting business. So up until today, all the businesses and the involvement I have, actually, I'm not the shareholder. I've always had a trust, which is owned both by my family and the charities that we support, to a point where I always believe that I'm just what? An instrument to make something better than me. So my view of other people's money was always these people that I'm working on behalf of, right, are the owners, and I'm just an instrument.
Yeah. Thanks, Ike.
Yeah.
Peter, in what areas is it hard for you? Or do you feel challenged to really live out your faith in your vocation and in as a steward of capital?
Omre, I mean, there's many privileges to be a son of God, as Rory reminded us, and to be a steward of capital. I think the most important thing that we often remind ourselves at Mergon is that God is our shelter. And I guess at Mergon it feels a little bit more practical maybe than in some other places because we really, because of the structure that we have, our purpose or our mission is to serve the kingdom. And so the kingdom beneficiaries really are the shelters, I guess. And so the way we see it, I mean, whether we're looking after other people's money, it's all God's money in any event. And so as stewards, we have a real responsibility to hear God's heart for the capital that we deploy. But as business people, I guess we want to run ahead and we want to do things by our own energy and by our own innovation. And we tend to be quite headstrong as business people, as you in many cases need to be in order to get things done. And so to really take the time to hear from God is something that I guess, you know, it doesn't come naturally always. At Mergon, we often remind ourselves that if we had a normal shelter in the room, we would actually ask every now and again, go and ask him and say, listen, you know, we are having this transaction. What do you think about it? You know, and we imagine that sometimes he would say, wait, I need to think about it, you know, or I'll come back to you. And so for us, when we have these type of decision moments, to actually take that to God and to say, God, we are prepared to submit this to you. We are prepared to wait on you for an answer. And we're prepared to ask other people to pray into this and accept when you give us peace and a unity around a specific outcome, that we will go with that. And that is actually very hard to do because it feels like you're giving away control of the decision and of the journey going forward. Over the years, if I look back, those sort of shelter moments have actually been some of the most blessed moments that we've experienced at Mergon. Some of the real sort of rocks that we look back on the journey that remind us that God is actually faithful, that he always comes through, that he always comes back and gives us a perspective if we care to ask him. Just maybe a last thing. I often think of the parable of the talents, which we often compare ourselves to, and we think God has entrusted us with talents that we need to steward for him. But in that parable in Luke, the master goes away after he entrusts the stewards, and it says he comes back after a long time. And in our case, we actually have a master who is with us, who is prepared to journey with us every step of the way. And as if only we will ask him, and if we will actually walk in relationship with him, then I know that he will give us more wisdom, more perspective, more insight than we could ever hope for.
Thanks, Peter. Now, Rory, you reminded us that Jesus really spoke about three things, and one of the three things he spoke about most is about money. Matthew 6, verse 24 says, "We cannot serve both God and money." So Peter and I, Jesus created a very interesting tension for you guys who manages money. Mm-hmm. What are some of the things that we as Christian investors, what should be guarded against in our hearts, or maybe as guiding, you know, principles, and how do we manage that tension of actually having to look after money, but given this tension for us by Jesus?
Okay, I'd probably approach it from a personal point of view. So I come from very little to the point where I am. And for me, because I had very little, and God has almost journeyed and carried me across, money to me has never, if I was to share, money has never been money, you know, the way we see it in the world, the way everybody wants to be a billionaire and everybody wants to be the next, Bill Gates, right? To me, money is an enabler. So I've always kind of viewed money as an enabler, as a tool to make things happen. So if I was to take it in the context of the responsibility I have as a steward of the businesses that I manage and the people that I work and invest with and for, I would say my context has always been to take money as an enabler and make it possible, you know, to do what is needed and do what is necessary. So to me, looking at money as a, you know, as a source of evil has never been in my framework, because money to me is like fuel. Money to me is like food, right? It's an enabler to make what is needed to happen.
Thanks so much, Ike.
Yeah.
Peter, Milton Friedman said in the 70s that the sole purpose of a business is to maximize shareholder return. So the only agenda of capital would be to maximize wealth for shareholders. Now, that's a thesis that have come under incredible challenge recently, and especially by the sort of millennial generation. How should we look at differently about the agenda of capital that we deploy? How do we balance, you know, the roles and the needs of different stakeholders?
Yeah, I mean, that's a... that's a big question. I guess we can have multifaceted answers. I mean, I'd love to hear Ike, your thoughts on this as well. I mean, at Mergon, we are quite clear about the agenda of the capital that we deploy. It's been interesting at times when you know, we're quite transparent to tell people we're investing in your business, and this is what we're going to do with the proceeds from the business. And we tell them the Mergon story and so on. And it's been interesting to see maybe going to Europe and some of these places to sit in a boardroom and see people's faces when you sort of tell them that you're going to plant churches and you're going to fund ministry work from the proceeds of this business. And actually, I think people generally have a lot of respect for that. And so I think as Christians, we need to take a bit more spiritual authority to step into the commercial space and be prepared to be transparent about the beliefs that we carry, the capital that we bring, if we are investors, that we want the capital to be used for good, to make to be used to design products and services, or invest in product businesses that design products and services that are positively contribute to society. That when we enter a boardroom, we want to ask questions, which we do in many of our businesses when we have conversations, say, how do we think differently about this industry in which we are, that we can extend dignity to the people that we serve, that we can bring more value to people that we engage with. And I think probably for me the biggest thing is, and something that I'm quite passionate about, is how do we, as investors who have influence in businesses, how do we actually help influence and shape the cultures of the businesses in which we invested in? A business is an incredible place. It's a place, I mean, in church we come together and it's mostly other Christians that come together. In businesses you've got people from different beliefs, you've got different cultures, you've got different value systems that sometimes come together, and but it's in that place where amazing things can happen. Where if we build cultures where we build on respect, where we give people a sense of purpose, belonging, as I said in the intro, and dignity, you can really show something of God's heart for the community. And they, in a sense, it's your first disciples, the employees that you have in the business. And so how do we build cultures that actually shape people's worldview in the businesses that we are invested in?
Ike, I mean, do you look for different things in an investment because of this? Are there different conversations that you think we should be leading or engaging in?
Yeah. So I was actually just listening to Peter now and talking about maximizing return, you know, and then as a kind of entrepreneurs, you know, we always look for maximum return. And in my, 20 plus years journey, yes, I must admit that when we look at a project, et cetera, personally, right, it's looking for the best possible project that gives you return. But as it evolves, and what I call the operating system I have as a Christian, is to say, what is return? Because some project that I return is actually just creating an enabling environment where you make some money, but other people benefit in the ecosystem. Mm. Yeah. So I remember there's a hotel actually we just exited it now. I mean, it was 10 years of labor of love. But what we believed that hotel was going to contribute towards the regeneration of Joburg downtown. So in that investment for 10 years, we made zero money. But when I was sitting with my team, what I was actually then telling them, look at what God gave us. We got a true story, right? We actually exited about two months ago. We got zero return out of a 10-year painful journey with this investment. But what then happened is that the friendships and the relationships and the people that came to the hotel offered us a connection of partners now where we actually invested. And if I look at that return, right, it gave us as a whole. Then I said, if you put all of this and look at what God gave us, we think we've done what we need to do in the last 10 years to contribute towards the regeneration of Joburg downtown, to create jobs, and also because the hotel was just such an epicenter in the downtown Joburg. So if you ask me about return as a Christian and what it means for me as an enterprise, that if your operating system, right, your operating system as a Christian is absolutely correct. Your return that you look for me is, yes, the return works, but the other elements of the return, or what impact it has on the society that the investment is in it, and also as you make decisions. Let me maybe use another different example to say, as you know, I've had two or three opportunities where you think the return is probably so good, but the impact of it, one of it was actually a tender for actually 3 weeks ago for a municipality to supply buses and trucks because we've got a Scania franchise. And the guy just wanted to have a quiet meeting with us. But the quiet meeting just was a little bit strange. So I said to my team, before we even walk into the room, I think we just need to tell him that because of COVID, we can't actually even meet him, because I can almost feel that this is against the grain of who we are, what we are about, and the people that, you know, the belief system that we have. So in summary, I'm saying the return on investment is different levels, right? Mm. Yes, it's not just, so I'm talking as an entrepreneur, it's not just about the numbers and what one gets in terms of runs and cents.
Yeah, and sometimes you rather just walk away. Peter, it's been a rollercoaster ride the last 18 months. You know about the anguish we experienced at Murgon Singh, one of our businesses valued dropped by 75% within a matter of a week. Many of the businesses having to close their doors during lockdown. What are some of the things that you learned through that? And what are some of the things that, if you look back, that you would have maybe done differently?
So, Omri, I mean, it was for everyone on the call as well. It would have been an extremely challenging year. I think we'll divide the world in people who were in business during COVID and people who were not yet in business during COVID. And I think all of us who were in business during COVID have learned different things about our own businesses and what. How to build resilient businesses and what it means to be a resilient business. Certainly, if I look at Murgon as a whole in our portfolio, one of the big things that we had to grapple with was how do we decide between, you know, we have a balance sheet that we have to build, and from the proceeds of the balance sheet, from the profits of the balance sheet, we give and we distribute funds to various ministries. We don't give. We see ourselves only as distributing what God had added. But we were faced with a really difficult decision in this time, where our cash flow dried up literally overnight, and we had substantial distribution commitments from Murgon, and we had to decide, what are we going to do with this? And so we really wrestled over this, and we had long-term commitments to almost, around 100 ministry partners. And I really wrestled with this because I knew there are so many people relying on this. And one of the things that God just came and said is that, and reminded me and us as a team over and over, is that this is in His hands. He built Murgon, and since when did we start thinking that we have to keep this thing going and it's out by our power that we're keeping this going? We had to let this go and place it into His hands and say, God, it's by Your grace that Murgon at all came to be, and so we need to trust You that You will do what You need to do with this during this time. And so we actually prayed as a group. This was one of those shelter moments where we actually prayed and together as all the boards and so on, and actually asked God, what do we need to do? Do we continue to give, or do we stop it, stop the giving? And where we landed was to actually say that we will continue to give what we have. We, one of the people on our board just reminded us that God is calling us to give according to our means. And so, but we felt that we needed to be transparent to our ministries the ministries that we support, and actually communicate to them that we will be giving on a month-to-month basis. We cannot commit longer than this. We will commit on a month-to-month basis, and if we have, we will give or distribute, as we say. And that was actually very humbling as well for us, because over the years as Mergon, we've been consistently delivering on the commitments that we've made to organizations. And in a way, it was hard for me to actually have to say this and send out this letter. But the response I got was such a blessing, because so many people came back to us and said, "We're praying for you guys. Thank you for communicating this with us. Thank you for being open and transparent and vulnerable." And so it was just an incredible lesson in humility that we can so easily want to put up this facade of control and that we're in control of things, and how God just used this to actually bring us closer to Him, to humble us, and to actually just help us to be okay with being vulnerable and not having everything under control. And so I guess the testimony out of that was that even though there were a few real tight months where a couple of weeks before month end, we still weren't sure where we were going to get the funding from, we actually managed to see through this period and fund and make good on our funding commitments every single month.
So amazing. Amazing testimony. Ike, we live in this beautiful, amazing continent of Africa, and we all love this continent, and we know how much potential and opportunity there is in this continent, but we also know about the challenges and the ups and downs and the uncertainties in this continent of Africa. Mm. You know, as investors, you and Peter, how do you look at investing in Africa? Do we just, you know, charge through these challenges and look through it and just courageously step into this space? As Christians, how do we balance faith and wisdom in investing in this continent of Africa with all its unique challenges but also opportunities?
Okay. So I have a feeling I must connect to the earlier question and just share that Rory just planted a seed of us looking at what God's mission for us. So if you ask me the same question you asked Peter, I would say worry less and let God be. So I, you know, as a family type investment company, for us, I mean, the worry was even probably 10 times more. I remember even our charity was affected, right? And at one time we didn't have anything. But I remember the message just said, tell Temba, who's my wife who runs charity, just to keep going. And I can tell you today, even the people that we supported month on month, still happened. Mm. So all I'm connecting to is Rory's message is absolutely true, and miracles are happening every day in the investment and the life that we live. And then on the Africa side, I think as a business steward, right, going to Africa, and as investors, I believe that the biggest issue or message I keep on getting is that if you look at many countries like the United States of America, right, I mean, it took them 400 years to get to where they are today. And yet in Africa, we walk in and I will invest today and I want my 40% return, you know, in the next 18 months. And we as stewards in Africa and business people, we just need to have the lens of be what I call patient capital. So I believe that Africa probably needs more patient capital to give Africa the same opportunity to grow and grow in and nature itself, and not build what I call popcorn economies and popcorn businesses that are around for 3-4 years, then they actually don't, you know, really simmer and ground roots and change societies and make the difference that we are looking for.
Yeah, I think what excites me about where we are in the world at the moment, and we'll hear from a couple of entrepreneurs in Africa tomorrow, but is the amazing potential that technology is creating for solutions that can really scale and roll out and I think move Africa forward at a rapid pace. I think there's a big catch-up that's going to be happening in the next couple of decades. And so that must present opportunities. But of course, you also have to do your due diligence and your homework and have a lot of wisdom. And I think also the key is to partner with people. At Mergon, we've learned over the years that partnership, real partnership and long-term partnership is a key to our business success. And I think partnerships between capital, between local people with local knowledge, and between people who've got the access to the technology and the platforms that can really take us forward is going to be key.
Thanks, Peter. Thanks, Ike. We're going to look a bit about some of the questions that have come through from the participants. First question is, you both work with people who share your Christian belief. In the world of investment, would you say this is essential? In other words, should we not be yoked with unbelievers? Who wants to take that one?
Let me take it, because I've had actually I've got war stories on this one, right? On trying to always try and find, So I have stories where the deal looked great, the other party looked good, but guess what? The sixth sense, I just didn't, pray about it enough to be connected to see. So I would always encourage to say, try and probably go within the values and the beliefs you have as a framework to help you find the right partners, rather than finding the partner and trying to make it work the other way. For me, it's been actually a really bad experience. If I look at most of the businesses that have given me the worst nightmares are the ones that I tried to make the business work and not first grounded on the values and the beliefs of who I am. I'm a Christian. This person is not. This thing is not going to work. Those business never worked. So my encouragement, my fellow business leaders and stewards of Christian-based businesses, work from your base and your belief and go the other way and not the opportunity. But that doesn't stop. There are other good people who are not Christians. But I'm just saying, if your prayer and your gut is not telling you no, probably chances are it's a no.
Yeah, Peter, I don't know if you've got any thoughts to add.
At Mergon, we have actually had the privilege of mostly partnering with fellow Christian believers on the journey. But we've also partnered with non-Christians over the years. And it's a different dynamic. So for us, we believe that we're not just called to look to or to focus on profits, but actually also on people and on relationships. So relationship matters for us, whether that's with a Christian partner or with a non-Christian partner. And we invest in this relationship with them. At the outset, it's important to make sure that there's a like-mindedness in terms of values and a value fit. And from there, where we've invested with non-Christians, we've believed that this is, God giving us an opportunity to live out what we believe in the life of this person. We've unfortunately had bad experiences investing alongside Christian partners, but we've also had similar the other way as well. And so we don't have a specific rule about that or a specific decision that we only invest with Christians. Having said that, there is some benefits that we have that when we journey with other Christians, where we actually can sit down with them quite openly and talk about what God is doing here, what is on God's heart, and so on. At the same time, we continuously try and step into situations where we partner with non-Christians to actually also, as I said earlier, carry that spiritual authority in and to set the example and to be courageous in living out our faith regardless of the situation.
Thanks, Peter. Mike, there's a question here for you. There are inherent risks in some of the decisions you have made, like using money from family and friends and using handshake contracts. Is that just you, or are those things that one needs to hear from God about? Are they generic principles that Christians should explore a bit more?
I would say, so handshakes are, I actually think handshakes are actually more expensive than a contract, because handshakes, you always have to be really sincere about the kind of relationship you have with the other party. So the handshake contracts, I would say, are a great foundation because they in the hardest of times, right? You remember, it's almost like a marriage without an antenup to say, are we in this for the right reasons together? So I would say the Christian framework and the handshake would work together. But on the other hand, there's some relationships that started as a handshake that I would have loved to actually just have had them, that initial agreement in writing, because they were challenged. And at the end, they didn't work because, you know, he said, but overall, I would still say, you know, if I was to go back, the best part and even the best learnings that I've had is because the foundation of the handshake still remains the foundation of the relationship, the business relationship. And even in the good and the bad times, you're not focused on the contract, but focused on what brought you together.
So you would say, still make sure you put that contract in writing.
Yes, yeah. But the foundation must be, if I didn't have the contract, I'll still do this deal. Yeah.
Thanks, Ike. Peter, let me throw this one to you. How does God measure success in the business or investment space? How do we balance the need to return profit versus the other returns of a business or investment?
That's an interesting question. How does God measure success? If I go back to the parable of the talents, which I mentioned earlier, it's interesting if we read there that when the master came back and the servants came to give an account, he didn't say to any of them, even the guy who multiplied doubled his talents from 5 to 10, he didn't say, well done, good and successful servant. He actually said, well done, good and faithful servant. And so at Mergon, we, in the early years, we came from through an era where God had just blessed Francois's efforts incredibly. I mean, it was unprecedented success. And we had to grapple with, what does this look like in the next era, which is more diversified, and with its own unique sort of situation for the era that we were in. And we actually had different metrics and so on. And we do target above market returns. We want to outperform the market. But actually, where we landed was that we said, let's be faithful. Let's entrust this back into God's hands, almost like we present our efforts as the loaves and fishes, and ask God and trust God to multiply it. And if he does, that is his choice. We need to believe that God can do so much more than we imagine. I mean, you know what it's like when you go into an investment, it all always makes a lot of sense on a spreadsheet. But the way it plays out is more often not quite where you pitched it, but in other instances, it actually exceeds your expectations. But we actually decided that we will trust God and leave the outcome in his hands. And we focus on praying. We focus on doing the best, the due diligence work, the best, bringing our best, being the best possible stewards of what God has entrusted on us, but to leave it in his hands. In terms of, I think there was a second part to the question, in terms of investment returns versus other returns, we don't specifically measure that, but we do ask three questions. How do we generate a return from our portfolio? What does kingdom impact look like through our portfolio? And what does societal impact look like through our portfolio? And we're still on a journey to figure out how we measure that societal impact in our portfolio.
Thank you. Next question. Can the panel share some examples where they made a decision to worry less? Would love to hear their business stories and the outcome. Ike, have you got a story for us about learning to worry less?
Yeah. Well, I actually tried to use the earlier question around COVID. That truly COVID taught me to worry. Actually, it put it into God's hands. You know, do what I need to do, the rest will come together. So to me, I remember when we went to COVID, I went into this logical self, right, where I would sleep less and worry and this. And I probably prayed less, I must admit. I thought, then we had scenarios and this. And all my worst case scenarios didn't work, pan out, right? And the ones that we needed didn't think about enough, right? Because we prayed, they actually came out. So that's why I was kind of sharing to say, you know, it's funny that when we're Christians, you know, when you're drowning, you know, now we're praying less and think we can kind of save ourselves rather than actually going to the ethos of who we are and probably do what you need to do. Do, you know, do the work, do the hard work. But if you say you're a Christian and God is in with you and God will guide you, guess what? Just submit. So to me, if I was really to share, if we are right now in COVID and we're going through this, worry less, pray more, and trust the outcome.
Thanks, Ike. I think a last question here that we have got time for. Business in Africa influenced by Europeans, then America, the last 20 years by South Africans, and then a few decades by Chinese. Any views that you guys want to share about how do we go forward from that sort of history and legacy, I guess?
I'll need to think about that.
Tough one.
Well, my sense is that we Africans got to do what we got to do, right? We worry too much about other things and not worry about what we can do. So we are Christians. We are in Africa. God has put us here for a reason, right? And our mission is to do what we need to do. And I actually don't worry so much of this. Instead, what I say to fellow Africans, let's learn from the Chinese. Let's learn from the Americans, right? And take the best of that and stop worrying about it. In fact, then I'd go to what Peter is saying. Let's partner with those that we believe have the similar values and are here for Africa's what benefit. And let's then move Africa forward rather than worrying about them taking our space, because we are in a globalized world where God has put us more together, right? Let's take the best of the world and make Africa a better place.
Hmm. Yeah, I can add one thing. I think you're absolutely spot on. I mean, business is pragmatic and in its essence, but it follows where there's opportunity. And so Americans and Chinese and Europeans are not going to stop trying to unlock opportunity and grab the value for themselves in business. If there's value to be had, it will draw people just like the gold rush in South Africa did and resources across Africa has done over the years. And so I think it's important for us not to sort of worry too much about that, but actually to say, how do we step up and I guess work together as communities of believers, as communities of like-minded people to say, where there's an opportunity, hey, can we help each other unlock these opportunities? Can we get behind each other, maybe with capital, maybe with resources or relationships? But I think we need to work more together. If we work together and through the networks and relationships that we actually have, I think we can achieve more, because if we don't do that, we isolated and we work in little pockets and we simply can't unlock the opportunities to the size and scale that I think it could be unlocked.
And I think that is a great place for us to end, and hope that this community that we're creating throughout Africa is going to be a place where people can actually make those connections and we can start working together and building something really great in Africa. Okay. Thank you. Gentlemen, while we might not all be investors, we have all been entrusted with something, a skill, an organization, a platform and a network, and we can steward in a God-honoring way for the benefit of others. Thank you so much for your time. I'm going to now hand over to Nyari to take us into the next section.